Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Casper Kubica and David Spratt of Carpe coming to us from Durham, North Carolina. How's it going today, guys?
It's going excellent. It's beautiful going day well. In Durham.
Great. Is it springtime in North Carolina? What is springtime in North Carolina like? I haven't been there for...
Springtime is chaotic. Springtime is 20 degrees during the night and 80 degrees during the day. But I think we're starting to mellow out into the summer. I woke up this morning and it was already over 70 at like 6 a.m. So it's really hitting that summer stride.
That's fun. That's fun. Are you guys native North Carolinians or transplants?
You know, I'm Casper. I'm from Utah. David's from Atlanta.
Cool.
We both came here for school. So I went to UNC Chapel Hill and Casper went to Duke.
Oh, great. Yeah. Fun place to go to school, I'm sure.
Oh, it is.
Yo, UNC is for sure.
Well, UNC, but you know, we all know which school is going to win the championships next year.
There you go. I like the rivalry. That's awesome. Very good. So let's see. Tell us, what is Carpe and where did you come up with the idea for this?
So, long story short, we had really sweaty hands and, you know, it was actually David who came to me summer after our freshman year. We were living together in New Orleans, despite being from, you know, warring campuses. And he says to me, "Hey Casper, this was, you know, we didn't really know each other at the time." He says, "I've been thinking about making some convenient solution for sweaty hands." And I said, that seems weird. You know, I've got sweaty hands, but I'm sure there's already something out there. And we started looking into it, and there was nothing really good out there. There were a few over-the-counter hand antiperspirants, but none of them really worked great or felt great. And, you know, David being the natural optimist that he is, said, you know, the market hasn't been able to deliver on this, but I think we can. I think we can solve this problem that we've been having. And we realized we really love working together. So, you know, spent the next year in a dorm room, went through 60 prototypes of our formula, and finally came up with Carpe, which is just a really simple antiperspirant for sweaty hands and feet, non-irritating, doesn't leave any residue. And we started selling it online in the summer of 2015 while we were still in college and grew it like that. And then last summer, we graduated college, and that's when we decided to raise this round that I think you're going to be asking us about today.
Yeah, so I'm almost visualizing the two of you, you know, meeting freshman year, shaking hands, and it's just like dripping from both of you, and you guys immediately have that bond. Am I imagining things?
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, it was a real problem for us.
Very interesting. So are you guys chemistry backgrounds, or I mean, how do you come up with these 60 different prototype formulas?
So I studied chemistry and health policy and management at UNC. Casper studied physics and computer science, so definitely have a, you know, science-minded, we're science-minded people, but in no way do we have our PhDs in, you know, chemical engineering or anything of the sort, but formulation chemistry is not complicated, and we read a lot of primary literature, research papers, spoke with a lot of dermatologists, material chemists, labs, and, you know, we worked with them on a consulting basis to get advice about how to make an extremely effective and amazing formula.
Interesting. And is it, I think the rub with antiperspirant, is it the zinc or the, you know, there's some concerns about kind of the ingredients in like your over-the-counter antiperspirants. And do you guys avoid that or what's the secret sauce?
Yeah, so I mean, there have been rumors for the past few decades or past like really five decades about the aluminum antiperspirants, but it's been an issue that's been out there so long that it's been studied extensively and there's been no link found between aluminum and antiperspirants and any negative side effects. I mean, I kind of honestly liken it to anti-vaccination fears. Like, you know, there's just nothing really supporting anything negative about it. So it's what works as an antiperspirant. You know, it's actually the only active ingredient that the FDA allows to be called an antiperspirant. It has to have an aluminum salt in it. So we just use it a really effective one that's non-irritating.
Gotcha. Interesting. Very, very cool. So you guys started selling this really out of your dorm room and then spun it out into a company?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, you need a it's an over-the-counter drug as an antiperspirant. So we can't just make it. I mean, we made the prototypes in our dorm room, but we can't sell it to customers, you know, when we make it in our dorm room. We had to go with an FDA-registered facility that did all the proper testing and maintenance. So it cost a bit of money to get the initial tests and manufacturing run done. So we started it with a small $50,000 investment from some local, I would describe them as businessmen who kind of really wanted to help us out as college students. They kind of took us under their wing. They put in $50,000, gave us office space and said, hey, this is what you need for a first production run. After that, we kind of want you to bootstrap it and see what you can do. Because it was still almost a side project for us in college. We were still fully intending to finish and graduate college, which we did. We just started spinning this up as it went. So we get to the summer of 2017. And from that tiny initial, starting point, just building off of revenue, we'd grown to a pretty sizable company to the point where we never really considered raising because we had that bootstrap mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But we were, you know, I don't want to do specific numbers except for the total amount raised, because that's public. That's $2.3 million in the end. But we were doing really good on revenue, and we weren't trying to make a profit. We were putting everything back into the company. We were doing much, much better on revenue than most companies who say we're going to raise a seed round are doing. And that actually put us in a really advantageous position to raise when we said, well, you know, we are going to be able to capture new opportunities, really bring this product to everybody we want to, and innovate even further, develop even more effective formulas. Raising a round right now would be good. And our numbers are really, really good for that. The biggest thing being that simply that, you know, our top line was quite high for a company going out and saying we're raising a seed round. Most people would say we're at a Series A size. It was just our first real round. That's why we called it a seed.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at a point where we could be profitable if we wanted. We were just, you know, putting everything into growth. So we thought with those kinds of numbers, we were actually going to be able to go out and close this round really quickly. Everybody said, give yourself 9 months for a round. We said, no, guys, like, you haven't seen our books. Give us a few months for this round. And everybody else was right, because you know, no matter how great of a product you have, how much your customers love it, and how much potential there is there, and how good you're managing the company even already, investors need a long time to get comfortable with you, get comfortable with the business, get comfortable with the industry. And so that's what we found. What we found is we went out there and we started looking for investors. And we're in a weird space because we're not entirely one of these new cosmetic startups that's like Dollar Shave Club that's really taking a commodity and just repackaging it, because you know, our product really is novel, the antiperspirant for sweaty hands and feet. There's nothing quite like it out there. At the same time, we're not really a heavy pharma startup. We don't have, you know, some kind of novel molecule that's taken millions of dollars to research and test. So we don't have the kind of ease of the consumer products. We don't have the very, very strong IP and upfront investment of completely RX products. So it was tough to find an exact investor category that would fit us, because a lot of VCs, they have some kind of paradigm for their LPs that they stick to, some sort of investing thesis. And we really didn't fit many. So we found our best pickup with local angel networks. And it was actually the Duke Angel Network and the Carolina Angel Network, our two schools that went together and co-led this round. And, you know, it's funny because I think they were interested from day one when we started raising. They immediately started putting us down their pipeline to do that. But it was 4 or 5 months before, you know, they were even talking about a term sheet. These things just take that much time. And that's one thing that we weren't prepared for.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, who did the 50K, kind of the initial, you know, seed to get you guys going?
So that was Bootstrap. Bootstrap Advisors in Durham. They're not really a formal investor. Like I said, there's some local businessmen who've their previous company was called Thundershirt. It was a dog anxiety wrap, and now they do a few Amazon products and help out some local companies like they did us.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so you start raising, you think it's going to go fast. Everyone else is telling you it's going to go slow. You know, I know you don't want to give execs, but are you talking 6-figure or 7-figure revenue? And if what was your monthly, you know, kind of growth rate? Like, how fast are you growing? Because I think from what I'm hearing so far, it does sound like people are investing in probably you guys, but also just the growth numbers, the metrics of this business. Is that right?
Yeah. So we try to keep a strict policy on not sharing those numbers, but they were strong. I think I can say comfortably that our growth rate is, you know, in the hundreds of percentages per year, right? So typical startup growth, like tripling, quadrupling in size year over year. And the market opportunity is really big because there was nobody really addressing the over-the-counter antiperspirant market for hands and feet. And globally, the underarm antiperspirant market alone is like $80 billion. And if you really look into where people sweat, hands and feet are just as serious of a problem as underarms. America is one of the few countries that doesn't really acknowledge that. And if you go to Europe, there's a lot of products that try, like Carpe, to be a hand and foot antiperspirant. I will say, I think, you know, we still make the best one. But we kind of tried to explain that to investors and said, look, it's a matter of the culture coming around. And if you looked at, you know, what our customers were saying and how quickly they were growing, that kind of showed we were in a position where we could really make that shift in America, where we could make hand and foot antiperspirants as ubiquitous and as easily accessible as underarm antiperspirants. And that's still our goal. That's been our goal since day one.
Okay, so let's talk about going through the process with Duke Angel Network and Carolina Angels. You know, how's the process work? Is it something you apply online and they review you, or did you, you know, work your way into kind of their deal flow? How does it really get into the details of how you got plugged into that system?
I think almost every single investor that we got serious with, there is a certain point where you need to fill out an online application just to get into their system. But that's not really the thing that applies you, right? The thing that applies you is the conversations. These were probably the warmest introductions we had, just because this is where we'd been growing the company for a few years. So we'd been on the radar since we started growing a few years ago. And now we were having that conversation that they'd been wondering if we were ever going to have with them. So that's how the process went. You know,
I will say we reached out to well over 100 different, you know, VCs, angel networks, et cetera. And all the ones that bit were warm introductions.
Yeah.
So no cold emails worked. It was all people that we had been introduced to.
Yeah. Interesting. And then do they each have, so these are two different angel groups, do they each have kind of like a process where you come in and present to the dinner, the monthly dinner kind of thing, or like what was that?
So kind of somewhat. So basically, Carolina Angel Network and Duke Angel Network work together on a good number of deals. And they also syndicate with, you know, Wilmington Angel Network and then Wolfpack, which is NC State. So all of the local angel groups work together on a lot of deals. But in terms of how the actual process works, you know, we're obviously tied closely into both UNC and Duke. And so it was in-person meetings at the beginning. And then, you know, once we got past, then we met with their executive team. Once we got kind of passed through all of the layers of diligence on their end, then we presented to all of the members. We did that separately. So for Duke Angel Network, they had a big conference call, and everyone that could make, you know, basically they would send out the companies in advance, and whoever wanted to hop on the line to listen to our pitch could. And yeah, then they'd obviously record it, send it out to all of the members afterwards. And then for Carolina Angel Network, that was actually a dinner. It was a kind of holiday dinner. There were about, you know, 50 people in attendance. Again, they recorded it and sent out the presentation to everyone that couldn't have been there.
But the canned dinner, and this was already, you know, we'd gone through executive committees. We really, you feel comfortable once you go through the executive committee and get to know everybody, and then it's just a matter of talking to the membership. So yep. I really like what Dan did with the call, because that was a quiet conference room. Nothing could go wrong. The dinner is a fun social opportunity until the mics break, and we were in this very long room, and it overlooked the restaurant, which had gotten extremely loud. So David and I had to scream out our entire pitch across the room. It was a challenging night, but you know, Ken somehow still invested in us, so we're thankful to them for that.
That's fun. There's always stories like that, of course. You got to kind of roll with it. So that's a good, you know, trait of an entrepreneur, I think. I have a question about the angel groups, because I've found sometimes with these angel groups, like, did you have a champion or two that were already committed that were sort of like being your deal champion? And then kind of conversely with these angel groups, when you're presenting at a dinner, sometimes I've found that you'll get like some guy who wants to sound smart who starts asking all these like hard questions and trying to, you know, did you have kind of an adversary as well? Did you have a deal champion or did you have an adversary?
I think that's true of anywhere you go, any presentation that you make, you're always going to get tough questions, but it's you know, not necessarily the key is not to have all of the answers, but rather to be open to the points that are being made and to be able to have a conversation about it, as opposed to getting defensive and trying to, you know, strongly defend what you've been doing or argue against the point. The key is to show everyone in the room that you're coachable, you're flexible, and you're willing to accept alternative viewpoints and actually consider them.
Mm-hmm. And I will say to your point, there are, you know, that is the way to respond to any question. There are a lot of questions with angel networks because you get such a diversity of people that you might get a question and think, okay, well, that's a dumb question. But you still need to show respect to it and respect to the asker. I will say one thing that's impressed me about dealing with VCs or people who manage angel groups who come from a VC background is that in most of my dealings with VCs in this round, when they asked a question that I didn't have a full answer for, I immediately realized, you know, I should. Those guys kind of ask the right questions, I feel. They really cut to the core of I almost feel like I learned a few things about where I should be focusing some of my attention from the questions we received from VCs.
Yeah. And let's see, you had a couple of VCs in the round, right? Launch Capital and Rubicon. Are those both VCs?
Yes. Yeah. Also great guys. You know, I think because of geography and because of the kind of unique positioning of our product, they didn't feel confident leading. But once we got terms with Dan and Ken, they were pretty, I don't want to say eager to come in. I mean, like, we still had to fly out, meet them, you know, really, really get to know them better. But what people say about once you have a term sheet, you know, it takes 6 months to get a term sheet and then everybody can come in a month after that. That's basically what happened, right? Once we had a lead on the table, it was a lot easier to finish out the round. We were very happy to get Launch Capital and Rubicon. Launch Capital, you know, we were actually almost completely about to close and then Launch Capital reached back out. We've been in touch with them and said, you know what, we might be interested. And we really wanted them on board because they have some great experience in the dermatology product space and, you know, a pretty good track record of success. They were an early investor in Spotify. So we were really excited that they were interested. And I need to say, like, their leadership, that's one of my examples. The questions they asked us when we met, those were like just really good questions about things like their details, things about our cash flow and how to project it and things you need to account for. But you know, you can, it's kind of like, to give a comparison in college, sometimes if you were in a really tough class, you'd sometimes get to the test and even learn some things during the actual test because of the way it was presented. Some of these conversations with VCs were like learning something during the test. And that's something I didn't expect.
Yeah, no, for sure. Where are they based? Where's Launch Capital?
Launch Capital is Boston.
Okay, Boston. Great. And it sounds like the two of you are you co-CEOs or do you go in on the pitches together? Or how do you kind of manage? Just assuming, given that we're doing a doubled up podcast, that you probably did the double up pitches.
Mm-hmm. Well, so David is the CEO. I'm the COO. I think we've never been in a situation where we wished the other person. I mean, you know, when we're together at home, sometimes we wish the other person isn't there. We'll argue. But when it comes to pitching to investors, we are so much more than the sum of our parts. It's amazing. Sometimes we'll get a question and I would not be able to even talk. And David comes through with a perfect answer. So, you know, I will say, we do formally have a designation with David as CEO and me as COO. And I think that's important. It is important to have one final person to sign off as CEO. But in practice, I hear some conflicting thoughts about having two people at the head of a company. Mm-hmm. And in our experience, I think it's formed just a much stronger leadership team. I know I couldn't be running it alone. Maybe David could.
No.
but yeah, I just think, you know, two people up here is much, much better than one.
When you actually go into a pitch, do you guys have your very defined roles of who's presenting? Like, how do you divide and conquer the pitch? I'd be curious about that if you have any.
So I think, you know, one of the things that Casper and I decided to work together on this, you know, several years ago when we were living together in New Orleans the summer after our freshman year, because of how well we complemented each other. So it's always been a very like organic sort of chemistry in terms of I know what I know really well and Casper knows what he knows really well. And we have extremely complementary skill sets, kind of knowledge bases. And so when certain questions come around, it's never, you know, no one's ever looking at the other person thinking, you know, who's going to answer this one. We just always know who answers what. And also it depends, you know, you can get a feel for if one person's on a roll, you know, you just let them go. Yeah. And so like the chemistry is pretty incredible in terms of, you know, how we can feel each other out and understand who should take what and when.
And we generally split up the actual pitch deck. We know who's got what slides, but like David said, sometimes one of us will have a cold or just not be feeling it that day, and the other person gets on a roll, and we just let it go. You know, we've never really had trouble figuring out who's going to say what, because I think we both always know exactly who should say what.
Sure. Good. Fun stuff. Did you guys ever, you know, given what you do, consumer product, did you ever think about crowdfunding, you know, finding 10,000 sweaty palm people to put in $1,000 each? Or did you ever look at like Circle Up, which is kind of a consumer products crowdfunding slash fund? Do you think about that at all?
I believe we had a couple conversations with Circle Up. Is Circle Up the place that kind of funds for you and then charges a few percent off the top? So
I'm not sure. I don't know their model.
Yeah, I think that's their model. I might be mistaken. It's either them or somebody else that has that kind of model. I got to say so for us, it would have come down to like, you know, raising a $2.3 million round, probably would have had to pay something like $50,000 to $100,000 to whoever had that model. If it was Circle Up, I think it was them. And when I had that conversation at the beginning of the round, I thought, okay, yeah, that's not worth it. We'll do this ourselves. Having spent 8 months, you know, really having to focus so much on raising at the detriment of other projects we could have been working on, I don't think $100,000 is too steep of a price to pay if we could have gotten the same results in the end. I mean, you know, the thing about fundraising is it really requires the founder's time. Like, you can't really hand it off to somebody else, especially in an early stage company like this. And So it's taking up some of the most important time we have to use in the company just to go around and really sell people on the company.
Yeah. But I guess on the crowdfunding in general, you know, having people who have, to be very crude, sweaty hands as backers, wouldn't that be interesting? Did you, you know, kind of an interesting model? Like,
yeah, we actually, so that is how we were thinking about launching before we got involved with Bootstrap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about the money, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're young, we're fresh out of college. We need the appropriate mentors and advisors and partners to be able to grow this to the scale that we want to grow it. So, you know, the money alone wouldn't have got us to where we are today. We are where we are today because of the people that we've gotten involved as investors and advisors. And that's really what we are looking for in this round.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we got with Bootstrap. We would not exist if it weren't for Bootstrap's initial advice and the mentorship they've given us. And I think we got another huge dose of that this round. But to finish out on the crowdfunding thing, we wouldn't have done it this time because it's just not the right scale. And again, we did want the bigger connections. But that first time, it's the same thing. Even if we'd been able to find the mentors in another way, when you're just starting out and you have no experience, especially at that time, we had very little experience on how to market this, I don't think we could have led a successful crowdfunding campaign. Mm. I think the people who would be interested are out there. We just had no idea how to get to them because that's been a lesson we've been learning, you know, every month since starting Carpe.
Yeah, cool. Okay, two last questions. Where does this go? Where does this take you? Do you guys anticipate raising, you know, another large venture round, or do you just kind of bootstrap this from here on out? Can you go back to the angel groups and raise more money from them, or have you kind of tapped out there? What do you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is it's an interesting question. Our model has always been, we can keep growing this company just off revenue, but we can, you know, we saw a whole nother level we could get to very quickly, you know, pushing Carpe into retail, making better formulas, even more effective formulas, if we raise this round, and that's what we raise it for. And the round doesn't require another round afterwards. We could be in a position in a few years where, you know, we're growing quickly off our own revenue, and we say we've got another life-changing opportunity if we raise, you know, at that point it'll be something like $10 million probably. And our investors kind of actually modeled for that in this round. As you'll find, most investors, no matter what you say your plans are, will try to put another round into their calculations in the future. Yeah. But right now that's up in the air. You know, it's just what the future holds for us. If we see another huge opportunity to take Carpe to a much higher level and we need to raise a round for that, we'll do that, because in the end, it's all about, you know, our goal starting this was really make Carpe an antiperspirant for sweaty hands and feet as ubiquitous and as accessible as all those underarm antiperspirants. And we're really on the fast track to do that right now. Can we talk about CVS yet? It's only 4 days away. Can we talk about it? All right, we can talk about it. Finally. So in 4 days, we're going to be nationwide in CVS, 8,000 stores.
Wow, that's so exciting.
And that's a big thing that this round allowed. So, you know, I don't even know what the next thing like that might be that might require another round, but maybe we'll just keep growing off what we have right now, because that's what our models show. So,
well, that leads me to my last question. I was going to say, where can people find out more information? It sounds like they can very soon go into CVS and and find you guys. But yeah, if people do want to learn more, what's your URL and any other plug or call to action, anything you're looking for from the audience?
I mean, you can check us out at carpelotion.com or just search Carpe Lotion. If you or anybody you know has sweaty hands or feet, check it out. That's what David and I had. That's why we made Carpe. And that's our mission here, to bring an end to sweaty hands and feet.
I love
it. Yep, carpelotion.com.
All right. Available online or at CVS any day now. I love it.
CVS now, yeah.
All right, guys. This has been fun. Thanks so much, and good luck. I don't have sweaty hands, but, you know, if I did, if I meet someone, I will definitely point them your way. So good stuff, guys. Appreciate it.
We appreciate it, Nathan.
Thanks, Nathan. Have a good one, man.
Have a good one.
Thanks, guys. Bye.